Summer 1967. By V. Frankenstein. Read by One Lost One. Recorded for the KissCon goodie bag. Summary. Earth, 1967. A wooded area in the continental United States. Spock is very late to pick his son up from summer camp. Rating general audiences. Archive warning. No archive warnings apply. Category Gen. Fandom, Star Trek The Original Series. Relationships, James T. Kirk and Spock. Past, Spock, Zarabeth. Characters. James T. Kirk, Zar, Star Trek. Spock, Star Trek. Nyota Uhura, Janice Rand, Charlie X. Additional tags. Alternate Universe Summer Camp, Blind Spock, Human Spock, Meet Cute But Make It Stressful, Kirk Has BDE, Big Dad Energy, Working with Children Is Always an Experience, Slice of Life, This is the first fic I have published in literally years, please bear with me. Notes. For V.T. Suen. In response to a prompt, in the KS Spring Fever 2022 collection. Prompt. A fun AU that puts Kirk and Spock in a completely different setting or situation or genre. Anything out of the ordinary that strikes your fancy. Crossovers and fusions welcome. All I ask is no sex please, and preferably no pining. I may have failed at the no sex please part of this prompt in the most technical way possible, but rest assured there is no actual sexuality present in the fic. You'll see what I mean. Thank you to my wonderful partner, Talara, for baiting this fic. It's been a weird summer, Jim Kirk thinks, as Far From Trees and the Cicadas take up their otherworldly afternoon chorus. Summer camps are weird, inherently, and Camp Enterprise was no exception. Still, the summer had contained a seemingly higher-than-usual number of unanticipated situations, ranging from his friend and fellow counselor Gary Mitchell being rushed to the hospital after being struck by lightning while on lifeguard duty, again. Ranging from his friend and fellow counselor Gary Mitchell being rushed to the hospital after being struck by lightning while on lifeguard duty on the second day of camp, to having to explain to a genuinely befuddled 15-year-old camper why it was inappropriate to slap a female counselor on the ass. During one particularly memorable trail hike, Jim had sent the group ahead with the other counselor and circled back to bring up the rear when he'd noticed that one of the kids from their group, a boy of about 10, was crouched, unmoving, a ways back down the trail, staring at something on the ground. The boy's name was Zar, which was a name Jim had never heard before, but Janice had told him that there were twin girls in her cabin this year whose honest-to-God legal names were Moonchild and Starflower, so he figured it probably wasn't all that unusual. Zar himself was a bit unusual, though. Not in a bad way, mind. He seemed somewhat distanced from the other campers, as though he were more interested in observing their behavior than joining in the fun. He was quiet, but would respond politely when asked a direct question, and seemed fascinated by the natural world around him. Jim had found it helpful to match the kid's energy, rather than trying to force him to engage in a way that might have been considered more typical. He crouched down, trying to see what it was that had caught Zar's attention. It didn't take him long. Just off the trail, a pair of snakes were tangled together, writhing in a way that made it somewhat difficult to tell where one of the creatures ended and the other began. "That's pretty wild-looking, huh, buddy?" Jim said. The boy gave a solemn nod. "What do you think they're up to? Do you think it's a fight? Maybe some kind of snake dance?" Zar turned his head, his gaze slipping from the snakes, to meet Jim head-on in unsettling direct eye contact. "They are engaged in sexual intercourse," the boy said simply. Jim opened his mouth, then shut it again. "That they are," he said. "Let's go catch up with the others and toast some marshmallows." Okay. There had been marshmallows and ghost stories and activities planned and unplanned, and the summer had stretched out in that endless way that summers do at camp, so that by the end of the 5 weeks, had felt more along the lines of 5 years. Now it was the last day of camp, and after closing ceremonies, they had shepherded all the campers with their belongings down in front of the camp office by the circular gravel drive, and one by one their parents came to pick them up and take them back to the real world. Pickup was at 10:30. It was now approaching noon, and Jim Kirk takes a pointless glance at his watch and an equally pointless glance at his clipboard and his checkout roster, which shows, truthfully, that all but one of the kids from his cabin have now been picked up. In fact, all but one of the kids in the entire camp have now been picked up, and the other counselors have gone on to start cleanup and closing down the camp for the summer, while Jim sits with Czar, the last kid left, and tries very hard not to say, "Where the hell are your parents?" "Who did you say was coming to pick you up again?" Jim says instead. "My dad." "Your dad. All right. Do you want to try calling him on the phone in the office? After that, we can go get some lunch." Czar nods. They leave the boy's trunk out front and walk into the camp office. Nyota, who is filling out end-of-camp paperwork, looks up. She raises a questioning eyebrow. "Nyota, may we use the telephone, please?" Jim asks. "Of course," she says, sliding the sturdy beige rotary phone across the desk. "Do you know your dad's number?" Jim asks. Czar nods and dials. The telephone rings. And rings. And rings. Jim tries again, double-checking the number is the one Nyota has on file. The telephone continues to ring. No answer. "Is that your dad's home phone number or his work phone number?" Nyota asks Czar. "His home phone number." "Do you know his work phone number?" "Yes." "Let's try that." They do. Still no answer. "Might be car trouble," says Jim. "Flat tire or something. Is there anybody else you'd like us to call?" "No, thank you," says Czar. "What about your mother?" Nyota asks. Czar looks at her. "She lives in Antarctica," the boy says matter-of-factly. Nyota blinks. "Your mother lives in Antarctica?" she repeats. "Yes, at the Amson Scott South Pole Research Station." Jim Kirk presses a hand over his face. "Okay," he says. "Think there's still any chili left in the dining hall?" There is, in fact, still chili left in the dining hall. There are also brownies. Czar has two. They eat and go back to the front of the office. Czar sits on his camp trunk, unusually calm for a 10-year-old, Jim thinks, given the circumstances. He's pretty good with kids in the context of camp, when he's able to engage them with a routine and their peers and with structured activities. But now that it's just the two of them, Jim is somewhat at a loss. He checks his watch. 1 o'clock. There are some large rocks positioned around the circular drive that serve the dual purpose of being both benches and barriers, and Jim sits down on one, shrugging off his backpack. This gives him an idea. "Czar, do you like stories?" he asks. The boy nods, and Jim pulls out a copy of Dune out of his backpack. "Do you know this story?" Czar shakes his head. Jim Kirk smiles. "Well, you're in for a treat." He opens the book and begins to read aloud. It's 4:30, and around page 110 when Nyota sticks her head out of the door camp and yells, "Telephone!" Jim jumps, returning to Earth, and he and Czar hurry into the office. Nyota hands the boy the receiver. "It's your dad," she says, giving Jim a thumbs up. Czar holds the receiver up to his ear. "Hello?" he says. "Yes. Yes. Yes. Okay. See you soon." He hangs up the phone, then looks at Jim, who raises an eyebrow. "He said the taxi will be here in maybe an hour. Will you keep reading until then?" Nyota starts laughing. They go back outside, and Jim reads until the yellow taxicab pulls into the gravel drive, shining golden in the late afternoon sunlight. It stops in front of the camp office, and the right rear door opens, the passenger unfolding first himself, and then a collapsible white cane. Jim blinks. Czar had not mentioned anything about his father being blind, but then the kid had also not mentioned anything about his mother living in Antarctica. "Hello, Papa," says Czar. "Hello, Czar," says the man, turning towards them. "I'm 10 feet ahead at 11 o'clock. The boy pauses. "But it's not 11 o'clock. It's 5:32 in the evening." Jim knows this kid well enough by now to realize that this is not a passive-aggressive statement, but rather his normal observational way of making conversation. It still takes everything in him not to laugh. "Hi," he says instead. "I'm Jim, one of Czar's camp counselors. You must be his dad. It's nice to meet you, Mr. Spock," the man says, inclining his head at the sound of Jim's voice. "I apologize that I kept you waiting." "I was a bit worried," Jim admits. "Was it traffic? Car trouble?" "Mechanical trouble," Spock affirms. "The bus overheated and it took some time for the engine to cool down. We were nowhere near a telephone, and the bus driver took the rest of the trip more slowly to avoid a reoccurrence of the problem. It is a 20-minute drive from the cab company to the bus station, and another 40-minute drive out here. As he talks, Czar slips off his perch on the camp trunk and walks to stand by his dad, who reaches out and places a hand on the boy's head. Mr. Spock's eyebrows lift up.
"You've grown," he observes.
"Yes, half an inch, and I learned how to swim and make a campfire."
"Practical skills," Spock remarks. "Shall we get going?"
"Hold on," says Jim. "The last bus leaves at 6. You said yourself it's a 40-minute drive from here to the bus station, and it's already past 5:30. Do y'all have somewhere to stay?" Spock cocks his head slightly.
"I am told there is a hotel in town," he says.
Kirk nods and remembers that the other man cannot see this.
"Yes," Jim verbalizes.
"That is an option, but y'all could spend the night here. Things have wound down for the summer, but the camp stays partway open year-round, and we have accommodations for staff. I have a truck and can drop y'all off at the bus station in the morning. Might be easier, and it's definitely cheaper than getting a hotel."
Spock nods slowly.
"This seems logical," he says, "if it would not be an inconvenience." "It's no trouble at all," says Jim. "Besides, have you had anything to eat since you got on the road?"
Spock shakes his head. "Well, that settles it, then."
Spock pays the cab fare, and the three of them make their way to the dining hall, Jim leading the way, mindful to keep his feet out of the range of Spock's cane. The buffet-style serving section of the hall is shut down, but the kitchen is open, and Jim sets about making the three of them grilled cheese sandwiches. "So," he says, setting down the plates at one of the long cafeteria-style tables, "Czar mentioned that his mother lives in Antarctica?"
Spock nods. "My ex-wife. She is a geophysicist."
"A geophysicist?
That makes sense. I don't mean to pry, but it was just a very unusual statement." Spock shrugs. "We are amicably separated."
"What do you do?"
"I am a computer engineer."
They talk into the evening, mainly Czar and Jim telling Spock stories from camp. After the sandwiches, Kirk goes in search of dessert and manages to come up with a banana, some chocolate syrup, a can of Ready Whip, and vanilla ice cream, which in short order he transforms into a banana split. Czar's eyes light up when he sees the treat, and Jim is quietly glad that the day is ending like this, with a last private bit of summer magic. The end. Thank you for listening. Also, a personal note from the Podficker, I would 1,000% be here for a whole series of Jim at Summer Camp. Just saying.
Please, 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 please.